This week on Barbell Shrug is the first of a five-part video series on the Olympic lifts. Today, we're going to be talking about how to get started.
Hey, this is Rich Froning. You're listening to Barbell Shrug. For the video version, go to barbellshrug.com.
Just in case you didn't know, you can watch the full, exclusive video version of this show over at barbellshrug.com. You think you love us now? Just wait till you see our nuggets and pearls in high definition.
And the best way to get
three, two, one.
Shaka, everybody.
Welcome to Barbell Shrug. I'm Mike Bledsoe, standing here with Doug Larson, Chris Moore, CTP behind the camera, and Charlotte. Today, we are kicking off the first epic. We're actually
adventure.
Doing a series. We're going to do a series of shows on weightlifting, Olympic-style weightlifting at that. And today, we're going to talk about how to get started with the Olympic lifts, and we're going to kind of talk about the history of weightlifting and how it got us to where we are now.
Because that's how you know where you're going.
Right, guys? You look at where you've
by
been.
Knowing the history?
You look at where you've been and to find out
Shakespeare
where you're going.
The best history is prologue to the future, right?
Charlotte told me Shakespeare may have been making all that shit up and that it was some dude named... What was his name?
You're ruining the fact
Marlowe.
I was trying to sound smart with a quote,
Marlowe,
and there you come with history.
The poet.
Well, I'm just saying it may have been Marlowe, not Shakespeare.
Make sure you go to barbellshrug.com, sign up for the newsletter, check out what's happening over there. Every day I hear there's people that don't know that there's a website where stuff is happening. Sometimes people are like, oh, I'd like to get one of those t-shirts or something.
What do you mean you offer awesome information
on
the
reg website
daily?
Yeah. So, anyways, there's also blogs over there. Chris Moore, he cultivates this blog that is just amazing.
It's
the best on the internet right now.
And you know what? We're going to make it better. In fact, all this effort, you referenced a five-part series. We're really putting a lot of effort at making this show even better. If people can get their minds around that, just get ready. Be titillated. The expectation should be titillating you right now. all of your titillating zones.
All right, let's talk about how weightlifting got started. I mean, it didn't just start with CrossFit. It didn't just start with weightlifting as we know it now. It started with ancient Greece.
Well, I think people they know the most recent history. They know it's been the Olympics and stuff, but that kind of displaces the fact that since there have been humans, strength's been a thing. And that we have prepared for labor and for work and for battle, of course, by any means necessary. So I think pretty early on, hundreds, thousands of years ago, humans realized that adding a little bit of resistance seemed to allow you to do more. So that idea has been around a long time. I guess we've been on this long march towards refining that, which is where we're kind of getting to that point now. We're reaching a new stage. But yeah, the history is really long and deep, and it's really fascinating. A cool book I'll point out to people, Peter McAllister, Manthropology. A really cool book, I've referenced it before, but he goes all over the historical history where man has used tools, become... He'd say manlier, but really it's like, how do you cultivate strength, prepare for battle? Stones, implements, clubs of all kinds, even the original form of yoga. We've talked to Seal Fit and, Mark Devine. I almost lost it for me. Don't forget Mark's name, but talk about how really the roots are in preparing yourself for work and battle. Even with yoga. It's really cool.
Yeah.
If you think about hundreds of years ago before they had, nice, Eleiko barbells, Rogue barbells and whatnot, to prove you were the strongest person, you would just grab any random odd implement, rocks, logs or whatever around you, and you would just see who could take it off the ground and put it over your head. If I get over my head and you can't, then I'm stronger. And that's the highest you could lift something. So I feel like with the snatch and the clean and jerk, the old way they used to do it wasn't exactly like you see the snatch and the clean and jerk today. It was originally, I think this started in the Olympics, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong about that, but 140 or so years ago, before the Olympics started, maybe right when the Olympics was starting, like late 1800s.
The second foundation of the Olympics, a new form, like the rebirth of the Olympics, where they called it.
Like modern
Olympics. Yeah, not like ancient Greek Olympics, but like modern Olympics. The first modern Olympics was like 1896, if I'm not mistaken. And they had two events. One of them was the two hands anyhow. It was just pick up the thing and put it over your head with two hands. And then there was pick up the thing and put it over your head with one hand. So I don't even think they had barbells at that point.
Like dumbbells with like shot.
Big bowling balls on the edge is what they look like.
Yeah, there's some barbells, but from what I've seen, their issue is consistency. Sometimes thick, sometimes thin. They're going to break all the time. They are hollow. They're iron. They're whatever. So any one day you can lift and get stronger, but consistency from event to event and everything, that was still a very rough idea.
It was more of a strongman type environment. Like if you go if you go and look at some of the history, it's like anything that was like pre-1950s almost looked like what they were doing was strongman stuff. Like if you go to a strongman event now, they're taking the single dumbbell and putting it overhead, and that's something that's not really trained for much anymore.
There's a cool golden age, right, where from this old stuff we're talking about, it becomes like circus events and ways to impress people at carnivals. It becomes a way of demonstrating and entertaining.
Yeah, they were freaks.
Yeah, and guess what?
They weren't heroes like they are now.
And people assume that this is old and that they were maybe not quite as strong. Their strength, the Louis Cyr and those guys, Eugene Sandow, right, that first bodybuilder guy who became the first popularizer of squat movement. These are cool things we've referenced and seen before in the bodybuilding.com video from our friends over that Corey Gregory and his team Muscle Farm helped put together and everything. We'll link that in the show notes.
Yeah, Corey and John Bros was in that too.
Very cool video.
Guests have been on the show before.
Yeah, you get more detail there, but you see a stepwise emergence of the barbell slowly. It hadn't always been there, but people were still finding ways to be really, really, really strong and muscular. But it's cool to see how it didn't really start taking shape as a modern tool of developing strength and maybe, I'd also argue, human potential until like maybe, would you say the 30s or...
It was something around the 30s, I want to say.
Yeah.
That's a guess, but I'm pretty sure that's close to right.
Yeah.
It didn't used to be what like it is now either, where it had to be like one fluid lift from the floor to the shoulders and then overhead for the clean and jerk, or one fluid lift overhead, you know, locked out elbows, like a clean lift. It used to be kind of more like Mike was saying, a strong man type movement where they just had to get it overhead any way they could, and then slowly standards evolved. There was actually three Olympic lifts until like the 70s, I want to say, where it used to be clean and press.
Maybe people forget that.
That wasn't that long ago.
Big controversy. People also, I guess, want to see it brought back for a lot of reasons. But yeah, clean and press was awesome movement.
Yeah, I mean, it turned into like a, you can look these pictures up online, it turned almost into like a standing bench press in some cases.
They would clean it
to the shoulders, and then they would kind of do like a little bit of a little heave, and so they would heave, and then they would kind of come back with it. But you'll see pictures of people.
They weren't allowed to bend their knees.
They would be here, knees locked, and then they would like hinge at their back, and they would be like pressing the weight like
literally
this,
turning it into a bench.
Hundreds
press.
Of pounds, you know, 400 pounds. I don't know if they 500 pounds is probably.
I want to say there was a 500 pound clean and press at one point. Yeah, and those guys. I don't think it's a healthy way to go.
Yeah, like Alexiev and Shamurkin.
Redding was my favorite presser. Serge Redding could clean and press over 500 pounds.
Jeez.
The only guy I've ever seen do that is the contemporary Zydrunas Savickas, my favorite strongman. It's about a person who can press, not jerk, not push from hack, not front squat, which is still really good.
It's a good
500 pound
front squat
is still really great, but to press just strictly 500 pounds is so impressive. But yeah, there have been beasts around for a really long time. And what I dig about that, Doug, is like specifically about weightlifting, it seems like it has emerged even separate from the other strength sports because it represents something a little different. Yes, you want to lift the most amount of weight, but what I see in that sport, independent of the actual lifts, is that there's an inner purpose, an intent behind weightlifting to find the most, you could say, beautiful, elegant, efficient way to move in order to get the load overhead. Like gymnastics is regulated by, there's a certain way you're going to do this. That's the right way. That's the efficient way. That allows you to do these movements. Well, a heavy snatch is a fine-tuned representation of how a human can best get underneath a load in that one movement. So I think it's so special and unique. That's something that took me a while to really appreciate, coming from the raw strength, powerlifting background, and really get that that's the purpose.
Yeah, when done right, it's a beautiful thing, and it actually doesn't look heavy. You can see a guy that's a 69-kilo lifter snatch 170, and it doesn't look that heavy, and then you think about, well, shit, that's over 350 pounds. Like, what does that feel like to deadlift? And then you think about that guy being, like, 50 pounds lighter than you and him just throwing overhead like it doesn't even look hard, and how much respect you have for that person for just being that fucking crazy athletic.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah, and then the movements coming along, like, they couldn't be refined until, like, the modern barbell came along. So it's like a lot of the variation from like competition to competition, from athlete to athlete, they're using different stuff. Or when we talked to Aleko when we did that show, they were talking about how the bars were breaking. Like they couldn't even finish the competition. They were having to like change out barbells.
Can you imagine trying to do a CrossFit class? Like technology wouldn't allow CrossFit to be a thing. Like, every time somebody dropped a snatch, like, fuck man, this is really expensive. Every set I gotta get new.
Or they were like truck axles that were, you know, this big around, just like an axle that you would actually find, you know, buying a, you know, an axle barbell that really is this big around, that came from it actually coming out of a truck originally, where, or like a, you know, like with like wagon wheels on the side of it that are made out of cast iron steel. Like Paul Anderson, you know, one of the first guys
to squat 1,200 pounds. It works.
Yeah, he squatted well over 1,000 pounds. Like he did, I forget what the stat is on him. He did like over 900 or over 1,000 like every day for like some ungodly amount
pretty
of time,
much,
like every like for like a year or years or something
pretty
like
much
that.
Always,
because he could. And one of the interesting things about him was he was one of the guys that very, very similar to like the ancient story of Milo, where he did kind of progressive resistance training. The story of Milo basically goes, if the audience hadn't heard this, where this guy named Milo would carry around a calf, like a not quite fully developed cow, and the cow would get bigger. He would carry it every day, and as it got bigger, he got stronger, and that was kind of like the theory behind how progressive resistance training got started. Well, similar to that, in a way, Paul Anderson, the story goes, he would have a bar attached to two big, like 55-gallon barrels full of water or full of rocks or lead or whatever he put in them. And then what he would do is he would stand in the middle of it, and he would do like a very small quarter squat, and then he would dig a hole underneath his feet to make it where he would dig a hole underneath the barrels to make it where they would move down, and he would squat under it, and he would increase the range of motion with the same weight over time. And that's how he got stronger, squatting well over 1,000 pounds many, many times. So it was a different way to do progressive resistance training before we had squat racks and plate loaded bars and whatnot. If you only have just two big barrels and you just attach a big bar in between them, then you can't really adjust the weight quite as easy. So he adjusted the range of motion over the course of many days.
It doesn't seem like inventing a squat rack is like so like, oh shit, mind blowing technology.
In hindsight, think the same thing about Velcro, man.
Yeah.
Like, really? They didn't just think, how about we make something we could put this on?
Or like, well, I wonder how long it took
like
before
bend
that
over
happened.
Sideways.
People wrote with
pens. We haven't mentioned that yet.
People wrote with bird feathers and ink for hundreds of years and shit, man. Of course it took a long time to figure out a squat rack. Shit is not obvious.
Well, I mean, they started squatting like maybe early 1900s with a barbell.
Mm-hmm.
What did it take 20, 30 years ago? Oh, man, we should like set this on something. Well, yeah, so we can start at the top.
Maybe a side bend. Side bend hoist is not the most efficient way to set up for your squat. Like if you pop your back before you even get in the position to do a lift, you can see that there's room for refinement in what you're doing.
Or maybe they thought about it like just, when they first were invented, like, oh, there's that guy using the rack. What a poon.
Just get yeah. Yeah, it was cheating. Like the
it's like what's like kipping
pull up. Right, it's the kipping pull up. Yeah. It's like guys cheating.
Honestly, I will say that's funny, and I'm almost certain that's gotta be true. Like if you go back and see what happened, like look at this guy over here. Thinks he's too good for a back bend or side press.
Well, what they used to do, to CTP's point from a minute ago, what they used to do before we had racks and before they were doing the dig the hole in the ground thing, which I'm sure some people did do that before they did this, but they took a bar, a straight bar, once they had them, and they would stand them vertically on one end. And then once they were vertical, they would grab the bar like this, put it on their back, and then they would rock it into a full squat and then stand up. They would squat, and then they would do the same thing and put it back on one end, and that's how they got it onto their back. So
if I bend over like that to like pick up anything, I hurt.
Well, you're not a trained strongman with a single arm single.
Oh my geez.
No kidding.
Yeah. But the cool thing, like we're saying, is the barbell comes along, and I think the beauty of it is that basically it's like a printing press type thing where strength can come to the masses, because now we have, especially as equipment gets better and they don't break, one kind of thing that usually weighs about the same, holds the same size weights, can be loaded for your grandmother who's picking up for the first time or for a strong man picking up 800 pounds.
Yeah.
All in between, it's standard. And then the cool thing is now people can go, I see what's working for lots of people. Maybe this works for everybody. I can capture it in a book. I can spread this information. I can start spreading how to train more effectively. And that, to me, that's a huge revolution point, like a big tipping point
in the history of sport. They took the barbells and were able to put discs on it.
You take it for granted now, but that's just a temporary thing, a contemporary thing, rather. Very recent development.
Made it much more convenient to train and all that kind of stuff. And so, we have the barbell, and then it's, you know, we were putting, like, shot in the ends and, like, just kind of adding it in and having to do that. We got the squat rack, and then Aleko came along, and I guess one of the guys there was saying,
Did the female lead that? I forget. Well, 1954 was the date, right?
57. It
57.
Was one of the guys was working there. and they were doing waffle irons, and they he was like, "Oh, we should make these barbells because they're always breaking." They invent like the modern barbell in 57, and with that, like, things got to take off for the sport of weightlifting. And so, like, a lot of rules that existed back then were like the bar can't touch your body on the way up. And so we were talking earlier about like gymnastics and how like fluid that looks and how weightlifting used to not be that way. It was more of like a brute strength from A to B type of thing. Mm-hmm. And because now the barbells, they turn when you move, and they started.
You can grip them
and then,
better.
And then yeah, they actually put knurling on mm-hmm. the bar, and then they changed the rules where it can touch your body, and now mm-hmm. like the movements. Now there's like debates over how the movements have been, but like the snatch and the clean and jerk that we see now, we've only been doing them that way for like what 40 years. Mm-hmm. Like 30, 40 years, that's been the competition.
And I'm sure it'll continue to change. I mean,
that's why like things are actually still changing, and I think they're changing at a really rapid rate, because before, like back in the 70s, 80s, even in the 90s, it was like all these countries had these coaches that had developed these athletes, and everything was a secret. Especially like Eastern Europe and Russia and all that. Like mm-hmm.
I can remember watching the 1996 games. Did you watch those games? That's the first time I really watched weightlifting intently. You had to stay up like 3 o'clock in the morning to catch the replays of the weightlifting because they don't mm-hmm. show it. It's always so infuriating. That's the first time I saw like Andre Chimurkin, these big mm-hmm. Ronnie Weller for Germany, mm-hmm. like my favorite super heavies in recent history. All these lifters, Pierce Dimas, battling it out and doing things that I really didn't understand at the time. I was like, I've tried to do this in gym, or mm-hmm. like not gym, but in a high school gym, gymnasium. I'm trying to learn like a power clean, mm-hmm. and I'm doing like 135, and I know what it looks like even then. Like this doesn't look like what that looks like.
I remember seeing this makes this look really easy.
Yeah, and then I remember thinking next, like mm-hmm. these Russians, these
is that Pyrrhus?
No, I don't know. These Russians,
yeah,
the Germans, like the secrecy, Soviet Union. Oh, and then a few years after that, when I'm in college, I get into the Soviet text, and I geek out on the secrecy, which in hindsight created false walls for a long time that I think really mystified and improved the sport maybe for a while for the time, but it's only now that that's been removed and we've seen an explosion in the popularity.
Yeah, it seemed like it feels like a lot of that mysticism has been removed just the last few years. We have the internet has come along and coaches are now, who have hung out with the Bulgarian coaches and stuff like that. I go, oh, this is exactly what they told me. When I trained with them, this is exactly how it was. So, like, the advent of the internet and then, YouTube videos. I mean,
Instagram, which has been, I think, has only accelerated reach of quick weightlifting education. Maybe even compared to anything else I've seen on Instagram. People like Diane Fu sharing video instruction and tips through that medium. I think mm-hmm. it's just a viral explosion in how many people can pick up and then learn weightlifting.
Yeah, and
it's nuts.
I'm Doug Larson guy and Alex Macklin dude on TechniqueWad. They really
I'll tell you what. Oh boy.
And I'm jealous. So, like, in one way, I'm jealous because when we first discovered weightlifting, there was like no YouTube channel to go check it out.
Comparative Stone Age.
There was like.
Really?
VHS tapes, man. You had to and you had to like know to hunt those down. There wasn't like a Google search.
I used to watch you had to watch Strawson's videos from Iron Mind.
So we would go over Brian Schilling's house and spend all Sunday afternoon like eating angel food ice cream, loading up because it's important. Window games, maybe we didn't know that then though. But watching Iron Mind videos of all these like Bulgarian training camp videos, going, oh my god!
I remember watching
the
1998 training hall tapes from the World Championships like on VHS. And I was like so lucky to have it.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah, even knowing that existed was crazy.
And then you show those videos in your class to your college class, like check it out, these people are doing this. Like, what in the shit is this? Like they're seeing this. They don't understand what's going on.
When I first discovered weightlifting, I had no idea. I was like, what?
They bench
this
too?
Is awesome.
No bench.
So
no
describe
bench.
The day you learned about weightlifting the first time.
So I had been it was in 2006, and I had been training since like 90.
How old is that?
96. Mm-hmm. So I've been training for like 10 years. Most of my workouts were coming out of Flex magazine or whatever.
Righteous.
Yeah. And then I had to take this class in school for exercise science degree. And it was like weightlifting 101. I was like, all right, whatever. I know what I'm doing. I walk in and it's like, here's the PVC pipe. We're going to go over snatch. And I was like,
you kidding me, bro?
And that day I stayed like late after class and I fell in love with it. But there was like no real resources at the time either. It's like the only person I could learn weightlifting from at that point was Dr. Brian Schilling, who I was extremely.
No resources. With Schilling.
Except for Schilling.
Only this fucking expert.
But what I was going to say is, let me finish. But like, it's like, I really lucked out because we got to hang out with a guy who probably knew more about it than almost anybody in the United States. And so it was just like really, really fortunate. So like we were all kind of like just happened to be in the right place at the right time, which is mm-hmm. great.
Yeah.
And of course, we all know Doug had the more ideal than you and I situation.
We're all jealous of Doug.
I was very, very lucky growing up. But in 2006 also, that's when I showed up to University of Memphis and started training with Brian as well. And that was that took what I had already done for the previous 10 or so years. Because I originally learned about the Olympic lifts at a bigger, faster, stronger convention when I was, that was probably 97, I want to say. I was probably like 13, 14 at the time. And then I had done it for about 8 or 9 years. And I was like 80, 90% proficient, but there were still a few details that I hadn't quite ironed out yet. And Schilling and Lauren Chu, they both helped me really perfect and refine those last few things to where now my lifts really haven't changed much in the last 10 years or so after getting those last little tweaks.
Yeah, we've seen it explode since then. I kind of like watched, I remember CrossFit came along and my buddy showed it to me. I was like, oh, there's weightlifting and then they're doing box jumps and then wall balls and kipping pull-ups. This is very interesting. So I started looking into that. I was like, this is a lot of fun, but I saw an explosion. I mean, we all got to watch the explosion of weightlifting through CrossFit and the internet. Mm-hmm. And we all know that like that helped really fuel the whole thing.
Referring to it in past tense, I think it's still an unfolding explosion. I don't know how long it'll be before it slows down because like I said, it's building and building and ramping up in this country. We have the world championships coming in Houston later this fall, ramping up to that. The fallout of that event where I think, this podcast and our efforts willing, we're going to try to shed as much light on that as possible to get in the Houston area, in the Texas area, in the southern area of the United States, everybody within flying distance come there and see up front what this sport looks like.
Oh, it's going to be the best
highest,
in the world.
Last year you had to go to fucking Kazakhstan for this experience, right, or whatever. Or you had to go to a big time. Well, it hasn't been here in a while. It might not come back, and who knows when it'll be back. So this is an event that we're bearing witness to that we need to get on board of. And if you are a young person interested in lifting, time is fucking perfect, I'd say.
Yeah, it is a really good opportunity. Like, it's not in the United States very often, as you said, simply because weightlifting is more popular in most other areas of the world. But now, again, because CrossFit came in and helped popularize weightlifting, I think it's more likely to be in the United States in the future. But still, it's the world championship, so it's going to be all around the world
rotates
all the time. So it might not come back to the U.S. for 5, 10, or even more years. So that's a super good opportunity to go watch the world championships. It's a cool event. It's a couple $100 to go to, like any other cool event would be. And you get to watch the best weightlifting in the world. We're going to be there. We'll probably throw a big party. Come party with us in Houston in November.
We're going to go see. We have an
You got to go see Ilya and Ilya set a world record. I don't know about you, but it seems pretty cool.
All right, let's take a break real quick. When we come back, we're going to talk about...
Doug wants to say something.
Yeah, maybe we should let Doug talk.
I was going to say, we're working on getting our audience a discount on World Weightlifting Championship tickets. If you enter the code word SHRUG when you check out, you get some type of a discount. I haven't finalized that yet, but that should be coming up very, very...
How the hell did you swing that?
I called him up.
Nice.
Yeah.
We asked.
Yeah. Nice.
Crazy
all
things
you
happen.
Do is ask sometimes.
Excuse me, sir. Can we come up with a favorable arrangement to help promote your event and offer some sweet benefits to our audience?
Yes. I figured we're going to be there. We want our audience to come. If we can get a few percentage off of tickets for our audience, then more people will come. We want you to come. It'll be fun.
Everyone flight has to be there.
It will be a party.
Yeah.
All right.
When we come back, we're gonna talk about the challenges new weightlifters face when trying to get in the sport of weightlifting.
This is Tim Ferriss, and you are listening to Barbell Shrugged. For the video version, go to barbellshrugged.com.
Barbell Shrugged is brought to you by you. To learn more about how you can support the show, go to barbellshrugged.com and sign up for the newsletter.
Okay, yeah, but fuck hockey.
All right, yeah. All right, here we go. 3, 2, 1, 3, 2, 1.
And we're back.
Whoa, did you get scared?
Yeah, I did actually a little bit. I was like, what am I talking
about? You jumped.
I blacked out there at the break. What happened?
We were just talking about how internet CrossFit has kind of helped make this a big boom, but at the same time, like, even though it's brought like this big awareness around weightlifting, I feel like it's actually gotten more confusing. You have this big discovery process where it's like, oh, these people are doing it in CrossFit. A lot of gyms have a weightlifting team now. A lot of people don't want to do the CrossFit as much and they want to start doing weightlifting. And they don't know exactly where to go because in the beginning there was one place to go and that was like the CrossFit stuff. If CrossFit was the way you found it or you found your one coach or the one coach that was in town, there's like oh, this is exactly where I get it from. Mm-hmm. For us, there was like not a lot of that confusion. But now when someone discovers weightlifting, there are so many places you can go. You can jump on almost any blog. There's probably hundreds of blogs out there. There's a workout listed that day, and you can just start doing it.
It's information overload right now. It's not that they can't find the information. It's that they find too much information. They don't know how to filter through it and figure out which is the actual high-quality information, what's kind of average, and what's actually not very good. And if you're a beginner, it's really hard to distinguish between those three levels. It all looks kind of the same.
Yeah.
And in addition to that, it's kind of hard sometimes if you have a coach who thinks they're really, really good, but they're actually kind of average, but they don't know the difference themselves. They're so new that they think that they're pretty good.
Yeah.
I've seen that many times. I've gone into CrossFit gyms, and the coach teaching weightlifting, I can tell they've only been doing it since they started doing CrossFit 2 years ago as well. And they are kind of okay by poor CrossFit standards. CrossFit has high standards, but like people that go into CrossFit don't have the same view of weightlifting that weightlifters have of weightlifting.
Right.
That's why the standards aren't quite as clean with press outs and whatnot. But people will come in as a brand new lifter and they'll see someone who looks better than them and just has some amount of confidence in how they're talking about it. And they'll think that that's the right way to do it. And then you see a bunch of people doing snatches, but they look like they're about to do deadlifts. And then all of a sudden it goes over their head in kind of a funky wonky fashion.
Yeah.
And having those bad habits established from the beginning makes it almost harder to learn it down the line. It'd be way easier if you just learned it right the very first time.
Yeah, and talking about like where people kind of categorize themselves as beginner, intermediate, advanced. Mm. And I don't think I've ever met anybody who was doing weightlifting for less than 3 years who would be considered intermediate. Mm-hmm. Like if you haven't been doing weightlifting for three, like specifically weightlifting, not you had snatches and clean and jerks in your workouts every once in a while, like you actually trained the lifts, mm-hmm. it takes 2 or 3 years to get out of that beginner phase.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people think that they may be intermediate or advanced and they're not quite to that point because of who they may be comparing themselves to.
Yeah, less than 3 years, probably beginner. That 3 to 10 is probably the intermediate phase. 10 plus years, you're probably an expert. 15 plus years, you might consider yourself to be elite. As far as knowing what is right and what is wrong, maybe you never actually went to the world championships, so you're not technically elite as far as strength goes. But if you've been coaching it and doing it for 10, 15, 20 years, then compared to the rest of the population, you're probably still in the top 0.001% or what have you.
Yeah, so this is like a really new problem is when we discovered weightlifting, it came from a coach. There was no one else in town to learn it from.
Mm-hmm.
We had one resource, no confusion.
Mm-hmm.
Now you get online and there's hundreds, and so it's like hard to choose.
More chances to get lost in the rabbit holes.
Yeah, and it does create a lot of confusion.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually can't imagine what that's like because didn't have to go that myself. But I see it. I see it as a problem now. I talk to a lot of athletes, and they're like, mm-hmm. 1 month they're doing this blog, the next month they're doing that blog.
Right.
And it's just like, and it's like they're like, I can't figure out why I'm not making progress, mm-hmm. and they think it's a strength issue. And it's like, you've never.
This is just like any other sport,
it back,
right?
You know?
I mean, it's not that much different than what if you were trying to be a basketball player or a football player or any other sport where there's a lot of technique to bring into you and then to get clear on. There's a lot of history to learn, a lot of plays, and all this context. You had mm-hmm. to live like that athlete.
Yeah.
Anybody good at those sports doesn't, within 2 years, maybe in rare occasions, you don't jump from, I just picked up a football to now I'm playing in the NFL, which people expect of themselves for some reason when they're trying to reshape their body and learn mm-hmm. weightlifting. It's just, it's not reasonable.
It's easy for us right now to see something online and know if it's good or bad information because we have context, we have experience, we have knowledge of what's actually good and what's not good. But for any other category, if I'm learning about something that's relatively new to me, something more obscure right now, I'll say like I've been researching Bitcoin or something that's like mm-hmm. new to the world, new to me. And when I go to research Bitcoin, I'm like, okay, well, I'm reading an article about it. Is this like some random dude that just learned about it and he's just writing like a blog post, or is this like some guy that actually really knows what he's talking about because he's like one of the people that's developing it? I don't know. And so in that case, it's really, really hard for me to distinguish because I just don't know that much about it in general. And I'm brand new to it. So I like to look at things like that. That way I can project what it's like for someone who's brand new to a CrossFit gym to see how it feels to them to come into this new environment where they don't really know what's going on. That way I can have that experience of being a novice or being a beginner, and it gives me context to help people where I happen to be the expert and they're the novice or the beginner.
Yeah. Another challenge that I see with a lot of weightlifters, and I've experienced myself, is self-doubt. Is like, I think a lot of times I think the biggest point for me personally was like most self-doubt when it came to competing. Mm-hmm. You go to a competition, you feel like everybody else in the room knows exactly what's going on. Mm-hmm. And they have coaches and like you don't know.
That's what everybody feels too,
and
by the way.
Yeah, yeah. And that's like I remember going and like when we first started competing, like we'd have our coach there sometimes but not always. And it was just like, and it's one of those things you start looking at what's happening, how the other coaches are interacting with the athletes.
Oh, it gets your head quick.
And it's like, oh, why are they slapping them on the ass? I don't get slapped on the ass.
Hey, Doug.
Is that right?
Can you slap me on the ass when I go out there?
Yeah.
Sure, okay. Can you rub my earlobes just like that guy's doing over there?
Yeah, like there's so many different styles. And then you get to, you know, weightlifting meet, and then now you have this timer that's going on, and people are changing weights, and you thought you were going, and now you're not. And like, for me, like, when I was first weightlifting and going to competitions, it was like very unsure of like what was going on.
Well, also
and it took a while to settle in.
You had this history where you were not a rookie to lifting, you know, about basic ideas, nutrition, training, all that. But you said like when you get into the training hall, where in this case we had laboratory equipment, force plates, and weightlifting platforms, and the people teaching you were Dr. Lauren Chu, Dr. Brian Schilling, Dr. Fry, these people who their whole life had been the study of mechanics and physiology and everything that goes into weightlifting, and their passion was weightlifting, and this was new to you. A lot of people probably in gyms feel that when they have their coach showing this thing, and they just feel sort of maybe small and really greenhorn in comparison to what they know.
I definitely felt that way when I first started weightlifting. I started in like the summer of 2006, and I got to train with Brian Schilling like exclusively. Like you were in there doing powerlifting, but you weren't really paying much attention to me at the time, I don't think.
Who's this guy? He's so pale. God, so pale. Barbara won't save that.
Doesn't even have a beard yet.
This guy needs a beard more than anybody. That's what I thought at the time.
How's he expect to be strong?
Well, then like Doug and Andy show up like 2 months later. There was others that showed up, and then Mike Falvo was there and like would show up at times, and like these guys would show up that had way more experience than I ever had, and I'm like, oh, like I felt really good about my lifting until they showed up, and then I was like, oh shit. This is embarrassing. I definitely had like insecurity at that point. Mm-hmm. And I know that keeps people from like jumping in the gym and trying something like snatch and clean and jerk.
That's probably the first time you'd ever been in a weight room recently, and you are the least experienced person there. The number one least experienced, because you were brand new and all the rest of us have been doing it for years and years.
Yep.
Yeah, like even I don't want to leave Corey out of this. He's probably watching this right now. Like, what about me?
No one mentioned me.
He was fairly new too.
He's Canadian.
Corey was fairly new at that point, if I remember correctly. But he probably had been around since he'd been in that program for over a year at that point. He at least had like 1 year experience. And the difference between 1 year and zero is a pretty large gap. So, in that case, that's probably a very unique experience for you being brand new when everyone else is very experienced. And in that case, like you probably can use that experience to project what it's like for someone coming brand new into CrossFit and brand new into weightlifting, because you really have been there where you were the number one least experienced person in the gym at some point. So you know what it's like.
Yeah, I actually was getting, I remember one day I was getting input from like you, Andy, Schilling. Like three or four people would come by and like give me advice on like two snatches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was like, too many cooks in the kitchen.
It's one of those days I was like, everyone shut the fuck up. No one talk to me for the rest of the day. I'm just going to lift. Yeah. Leave me alone.
Usually when that happens, someone's like, why don't you just like extend your first pull just a little bit? And then the person after them is like, you probably need to cut that a little bit shorter. And you're fuck.
Yeah, it was like one of those things where like everyone gave me something different. And I was like, they're fucking
with me right now.
Another thing is that there's just too much. It's not that there's just too much info, but that it's just highly technical in itself. And then especially if you're coming from CrossFit, it's just like, damn, man, how am I going to squeeze this in when I'm worrying about everything else? So you're not getting it's like a lot of info to like digest on top of not having proper time to just focus on
that thing. I guess that would be the equivalent to now, like people getting coached by multiple coaches at one time would be the same as like jumping from blog to blog and reading different coaches' text on or watching different videos, or it'd be the same as going to seminars back to back where they're teaching different techniques or using different terminology to explain how to do the lifts properly. Mm. I think a lot of times people stack information too close to too much different information too close to each other. Mm-hmm. They don't give it a chance to like settle in.
It reminds me like reading books. Like you could pick all these books off a shelf and they're all random, written by different people. How they fit together in one body of like how you can think better for having read them is all the work that remains. Like how you link the ideas together, what ideas cross over and correlate.
Yeah.
Not just all these specific outcomes you have to somehow memorize. Of course, that's going to feel a little burdensome.
Yeah, and Doug was talking about this earlier, is finding a coach that's like experienced.
Mm-hmm.
So like a lot of times people are, you know, they don't know if their coach really is teaching them the best way to learn mm-hmm. weightlifting. And I think more often than not, I mean, I've watched the CrossFit thing happen. You know, we became an affiliate in 2007 mm-hmm. with CrossFit Memphis. And so we had weightlifting under our belts before we started doing CrossFit. And for a long time, it was kind of weird to watch mm-hmm. like how some of the things were being coached. And then over time, the average CrossFit coach got really good at coaching weightlifting.
Mm-hmm.
So like the standards for the average is definitely improved tremendously. Mm-hmm. That still doesn't mean they're advanced.
Right. I mean, it sounds intuitive what I'm about to say, but and there will definitely be exceptions to this rule. But a good CrossFit coach that probably is good at weightlifting has competed in weightlifting also. If they haven't competed in weightlifting, they've been doing CrossFit for, you know, 5 or 7 or 10 years, and they haven't actually competed as a competitive weightlifter specifically, it doesn't mean that they're not going to be good at it, weightlifting guaranteed. But the CrossFitters that have taken some time away from just CrossFit and competed yeah. in just weightlifting, they just seem to be better at weightlifting. It probably
well,
means
your
they
awareness
have
a, goes up, right? You're aware of all these other considerations.
Your awareness, your expectations, your just the amount of time that you focused on those lifts themselves and kind of got away from the massive variety of movements that CrossFit offers. It's hard to get good at 1,000 things all at the same time. And with weightlifting, with snatch, clean, and jerk, those are the most probably complicated movements that you would typically find in a CrossFit gym. So taking a little time away and specializing on those and competing in weightlifting and hanging out with other people that are just weightlifters for at least some period of time, maybe a year, maybe two, you know, maybe 3 months here, 6 months there, that type of thing. The people that do that just seem to be better at weightlifting overall. And I don't think that's I do think that rather is an intuitive thing, but people don't consider it for some reason.
Yeah. All right, let's take a break real quick. When we come back, we're going to talk about how to actually go about starting getting into a great weightlifting program.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. I know we've got some sexy and provocative voices here on Barbell Shrugged, but you haven't seen anything yet. Just head on over to barbellshrugged.com and check out the full exclusive video version of this show to find out just what you've been missing.
Try to type that in your fucking search bar.
3, 2, 1.
And we're back. We're going to talk about how you can actually get started as a beginner in weightlifting and not screw it up. Jesus Christ.
Man, it was early on. You might as well start
again.
What is
going on?
3, 2, 1.
And we're back. We're going to be talking about how to get started in weightlifting as a beginner. So as we had stated before, if you haven't been doing weightlifting-specific training for 2-3 years, this might be you. So check it out. Chris.
Hi, Michael.
What are, as a beginner weightlifter, what exactly do they need to be looking for in regard to, like, the best program? Like, finding the best program, there's so many out there, there's a little bit of confusion.
Yeah.
How do I identify that?
Well, I mean, everybody knows how it feels to see all the options for things you could do. Everybody offers a blog, a program, things to jump into. I'd say the number one thing you should consider is, apart from, is the program actually for somebody like you? Are you an Olympic caliber athlete, been training for 10 years, or are you a beginner? So start there. But also, is that program truly comprehensive? Because just a list of workouts and maybe some recommended mobility exercises is not what I would call a program. That's components of what should be a bigger vision, a grander plan, a more long-term commitment that you're going to work towards.
So not just a list of workouts.
Yeah.
That's what a lot of times people kind of think about, oh, I need to do a program, and all they think about is the list of workouts. So Monday I do this. And they only think about what happens with the barbell. You're saying a comprehensive program
is more than just that. You found a treasure map with no additional guidance on what you should do first, how you should keep that up, you know, how you should feel for this mission. Like, it's only one part of the necessary information that you're going to need to actually arrive at success. In this case, being competitive or at least being able to snatch your body weight or what have you.
We kind of hit on that a little bit earlier. We talked about mobility, technique, and strength. And so, like, a lot of times the strength and even some technique are kind of addressed in a program. But, you know, in addition to something like mobility specific to weightlifting, you also have like recovery and things like that that could be addressed.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, really, you're looking for a comprehensive training plan that is in line with your one very particular goal. So if you're looking to be good at weightlifting specifically, then obviously you should get a weightlifting program. And to your point, that doesn't just mean the workouts. If you look at, again, most block programming just says, okay, you're going to do snatches, then cleans, then squats, and then pull-ups, and then you're done, or whatever. It's just the kind of the core part of the workout. The mobility work isn't there. The warm-ups aren't there. The cool-down stuff isn't there. There's no prehab-rehab stuff there. There's no nutrition there. There's no amount of periodization, and there's many different types of periodization. Mm-hmm. And it's not looked at in the context of a four-week block, an eight-week block, or even a year macro cycle. It's really just, you know, the workout of the day, and there's value in having a workout to do. But once you are consistent and you have done some workouts and you can follow something like block programming, then
exactly,
it's time to think, okay, well, now what's the next level that I could go to? And that is going to work better than just simply following random workouts day to day to day.
Nothing wrong with those resources. They're just making a few assumptions, like you already know some of these things. And if you're a beginner, then it's okay if you don't, but you need to know that going into that. You can't assume that that's already baked in, that they're considering that. I'd say another thing I think about in terms of what is a complete program is like the most necessary part. The programming and the recommendations of what to do are great, but everybody who's ever trained in a training hall with other lifters who have your same goal in mind, they're dedicated, their lifestyle is, maybe they work, they come here, and then while they're in that room, they're dedicated to the craft of weightlifting. They aren't going to do this for 8 weeks and move on. This is their life. They're going to live it, breathe it. There's a lot. That's a really rich environment to immerse yourself in. There's a lot of other data that you pick up on that you can't get on a blog, let's say. Like, to experience what it is to be a weightlifter, to see what speed is, to see what a good snatch looks like live. Just to witness it is a whole different story.
I remember when I started first weightlifting, a training session just wasn't a time to go work with the barbell. It was in between sets, it was discussing ideas of strength training and why we were doing the things we were doing, and then we were talking about what we were mm-hmm. going to do to recover afterwards.
Comprehensive
These
seminar.
Were all discussions that were happening. There were coaches in the room. There were other athletes in the room, and we were all working really hard, and the conversations weren't just about, like, oh, is this how my technique should look? It went far beyond that.
You talked history and context. After you get through training, you go get a meal and talk about, you know, just how you're going to then go into the next thing. So kind of you build a rhythm and a whole lifestyle around it, which is really amazing. That's really what it takes if you're going to really accelerate your progress, I'd say.
Yeah.
And again, we talk about this all the time with respect to many different topics, but it certainly holds true in weightlifting as well, that you're kind of the average of the five people you hang out with the most. So if you're around other people that have either been doing weightlifting longer than you or just simply better at it than you, which in order to do that, you got to be around some type of community that community prides themselves on their weightlifting technique, on doing the right things right, on doing their mobility when they're supposed to, on warming up the right way, on doing a good comprehensive weightlifting plan. That becomes the standard, and then you will just grow into that model, so to speak, almost automatically. So if you can get around people that are, you know, just like you and have the same goal that you have, then you'll kind of just fall in line, and it'll happen automatically, and you won't have to kind of go through this uphill battle of trying to convince yourself to do it.
Yeah, you can feel it. If you're either static, you're being drawn down by the vibe in the gym, or everything around you is actively drawing you up and encouraging you and making you see how you could be better. That's a huge difference. Like, same workout could be on the board, but what is the vibe? Are you being pulled up or down?
Yeah, additionally, I think being, if you're the best in your gym, if you're training and you're the best one, then you're not getting outside and you're not, you know, maybe you're the best in your town. Well, maybe you need to take a trip every once in a while to a place where you're not the best and
even
really
if you're
get
broke,
challenged.
You could be a college student, and that might be what people would say could object. Like, well, I don't have the money to train. Well, dude, all of us here, like, what do we do when we wanted to go learn? Do we have a lot of money to travel when we were in college to do it? No, but you pack some beef jerky. You take two clean pairs of underwear, which maybe you're lucky if you have that in college. I don't know. I mean, we were. You make like $800 a month, and you find a way to out and travel, to go to a place like Westside, if it was me, or to go train at a weightlifting gym, which back then was really rare. But now there's no excuse. In your state, there's somebody who knows a lot more than you, and you can benefit by going. So just do it, man.
Yeah, I remember we were, I think the three of us, we all made around or less than $1,000 a month
for a long time.
When we were in college.
Fucking, for longer than I want to admit.
So it's like, but we all did figure out. I mean, we would, how many people we cram in a hotel room? Like 8 people.
Fuck.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe more. Like people were sleeping on the floor. People were eating cans of tuna.
And one time I made the mistake like calculating my hourly wage, and I was like, trembling to my core. I'm like, oh, God. Luckily, I'm going to go on to conquer the world with this degree, which I guess I kind of did.
Yeah, so
in my own unique little tiny way.
I guess
way.
That's a little tangent about, like, you know, if you have an excuse, really, we don't believe that you have that excuse. You can use it all you want, but
you can do it. It's not like
you can't get us to believe that that's
get past
valid.
That. Get past the excuse.
Yeah. How do you? And if you do travel, say you went to Westside Barbell, uh-huh. And how many people go to Westside and they want Louis's attention, right? Louis gets thousands upon thousands of people right. to go to that gym, and they want his advice and his attention, whether it's in person or over the phone after the fact. Well, maybe that's not the easiest route. Maybe you could just find, you know, one of the top lifters in the gym who doesn't have like near the amount of people that are vying for his attention, asking for his training advice compared to Louis, and you can just get that guy's phone number, and then when you go back to town, you can just call that guy. That guy will probably take your call every single time, whereas Louis is probably way too busy.
And he'll help you actually kind of a lifter who's involved kind of maybe from a practical perspective, maybe from a like, here's exactly what to do perspective can lead you through it quickly.
And a good coach.
There are a lot of great, great, knowledgeable lifters in these gyms because what are they doing? Some of them might just be walking through the motions, but in the barbell sports, people are at that level have learned and accumulated a lot of information. Yeah. The top layers of that gym are just a gold mine for you.
A good coach is going to also say with a good plan. So I think a lot of, you know, we're talking about getting around people who are better or getting around coaches who are experienced, but having a discussion with a coach or just finding a coach who's interested in developing a long-term plan for you. Doing 2 months of a beginner program, like we said earlier, and then hopping into something advanced is just not what you want to do. Like every month should build on the previous month and take into consideration what the athlete's done before. And
do you have any specific advice? Because right there you're touching on that trust issue, right? Like people might know what the right thing is to do, and they get into a program, and what they're going to feel is maybe the real life setting in of like, man, I really want to get better quick, or it's been 8 weeks, how much more of this before I get progress, and this guy's telling me advice. Like, how do you know that you can stay to it?
I think just having a discussion with the coach and asking them why. You know, you don't want to be, I mean, an athlete that asks why for every single thing ever
that
all the time.
That makes you a
douchebag. is, as a coach, you're like, just do what I say. And there is something to doing just what the coach says. And after they have your trust, a lot of times that is the best thing to do is just say, yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. I'm going to go take care of this. I'm going to do it. But I do think that, like, you should go, hey, why are we doing this for the next 12 weeks? And they should be able to say, well, during this phase of training, you know, this is all about, you know, more of the general physical preparedness, getting the body condition to train. And then you have this part, which is our big transition period. And then we have this period, which is where we really get to see your one rep maxes go up. You know, so it might be a 12-week program. It might be 16, 20 weeks. I like to take beginners through, you know, the first 20 weeks is like you're not maxing out on a lot of stuff for a long time. And there's a reason for that. And if someone came and asked me, I could explain it to them. So I think sitting down with the coach and saying, like, what are your goals in the next year are kind of the way to go. And if nobody, you need to find someone who's interested in planning something that builds month over month for as long as a year. And if you're not looking further out than 3 or 4 months for, you know, if you're trying to develop as a weightlifter, you know, I'm not talking about somebody who just maybe wants to get a little bit better and so they can do other stuff better. But like, if you really want to be a weightlifter and that's something you really want to master, you need to be looking at it a year at a time. And looking at the next 12 weeks only, you know, it's like, all right, we're going to do 3 months, then we're going to max out. And then after that, you're going to go, well, what's next?
So
like,
I guess
let's look at this from an annual perspective, in my opinion.
If your coach can't demonstrate that this leads to that and here's why, then that's why your trust is maybe founded.
Yeah, but if you can...
If you got this big urge to do something else, it could be that you're right, or it could be that maybe you haven't done enough to reach out and get the answers to those questions,
and
in which case it's your fault.
We actually do this at Faction Strength and Conditioning. Our coach, Coach David, he actually makes a little video and explains why we're doing this week. for our general fitness classes, for the CrossFit classes, for the weightlifting.
It works great.
We don't wait for the athlete to come to us to ask. We know that athletes need to have that trust. And so we just kind of preemptively go, okay, we know exactly how to keep your trust over a long
period of time. So a great
coach
is going to take the time to be proactive and do something like for it. If they're doing that, they're really thinking carefully.
Good coaches that aren't as proactive, and if all you have to do is ask. So sometimes all you have to do is say, hey, why are we doing this? And if they go, oh, I got so busy I forgot to explain why, you know, they'll appreciate the question if it's a good question.
They go, good question. I'll be back in 15.
they're scratching their head in the corner. It's like, oh, fuck.
Well, I mean, you want to be awesome now, right? Right now? Then do this now.
Yeah, just to reiterate your point, the best coaches in the world, they always have a very particular reason why they're doing every single thing they're doing in their programs.
Yeah.
Or how their programs from 1 week fits into the next week, or yeah, 1 month fits into the next month, or even 1 year fits into the next year. You're talking about annual plans right now, but if you think about like athletes at the very, very top, as in people that are going to the Olympics,
yeah,
they're really thinking about it in, you know, from a 4-year perspective, and then they're breaking it back down from there. So there are people in the world that plan their training out in 4-year blocks, and then beginning with the end in mind, regress back down all the way eventually to a single day. But they know this day is going to build towards this 4-year goal. So right, 1 year isn't that crazy. It's like actually not as long as some people go.
Yeah, I think 1 year is pretty much the minimum. If you're an athlete, like you need to be. Because there's seasons, you know. Even in weightlifting, there's seasons. You have nationals. You have American Open. These are big meets. Even if you're not competing at them, you should be competing at them eventually. And so having those, being in the habit of creating annual plans is a great thing to do.
Well, yeah, once you've been lifting for a while, too, you realize that's really like the basic fundamental block, really, of the planning. Because, like, I know when I was competing, it'd be one event a year that you'd kind of focus on, and everything else would kind of build to that. That's like the smallest unit. And of course, as you get in your 30s, you realize just how short a year can be. So a year is not as long as you would think.
Yeah.
For sure.
One of the last things I want to talk about is just progression. You know, have a program that is progressing your strength. And that, again, like we said before, that doesn't exactly mean that you're getting your strength work when you do snatch and clean and jerk practice. Think about that as practicing a movement and a skill. And then strength work, you know, should be, you know, squats, presses, pulls. And a lot of work, kind of you alluded to before, Doug, is something prehab, identifying where there might be some weaknesses. And a good coach is actually going to be able to anticipate weaknesses. I know that when we look at developing a program for athletes, it's one of those things where we've coached, I don't know how many people I've coached, probably over 1,000 athletes in weightlifting. And it's like, we know the common things. We know that there's common, it's very common for this to be weak, or very common for this mobility restriction to exist. So a good coach is going to anticipate that, and then the program is going to reflect that.
Yeah, a lot of times you can just watch somebody move and then be like, okay, well, you're likely moving incorrectly, or you have compensation because of this weakness, this lack of mobility here. And then you can start working through the process of figuring out exactly what's causing that movement inefficiency, is what a lot of people call it. So what you can do in that case is run someone through a series of tests, figure out where they're weak, and then you can program that in intentionally to shore up those weaknesses before they actually become a problem, which means they would get injured.
Get injured, yeah.
You mentioned before, Mike, very curious thing about your former self when you got into the training hall for the first time. Your former self. Maybe you visit him since in a dream state. Who knows?
Maybe.
But in this case, you're in this environment with a lot of great old school weightlifting minds who had a lot more knowledge under the belt than you, and you felt a little, the waves of self-doubt. And that's interesting because just about everybody who takes on this challenge, you know, this is a big call to adventure. Come on, jump in, try to be, well, not try, but this is how you're going to do it.
Right.
If you could go back as an expert to yourself, what would you say to sort of soothe those self-doubts and give you the kick in the ass you needed to stick to this?
There you go.
Hey, Mike.
Man up.
Yeah. Like, you know what, though? Like, because I made
out brass balls and lay them on the table, right?
My whole life, I think there's a certain personality types over there. I've been pretty comfortable being uncomfortable. And I think something that I guess I could pass on to you at home is that you should get comfortable being uncomfortable, but also know that if you are comfortable, you're probably not growing. The most uncomfortable circumstances cause the most amount of growth. So if you're not uncomfortable on a fairly regular basis, then you know that you're probably not growing. And so I think a lot of people think about getting good at weightlifting. I'm going to get good at snatch, I'm going to get clean and jerk, and I'm going to wait until I'm good to show up to a weightlifting meet.
No such thing.
Because a weightlifting meet's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I promise you, going to a weightlifting meet is going to make you better at your snatch and your clean and jerk. And if you wait until you're really good at snatch and clean and jerk, and then you show up to your first meet, guess what? You're not going to hit the numbers you think you're going to hit. Things are going to throw you off. You have to start practicing competing when you start practicing weightlifting. And so once you're able to do a full snatch, full clean and jerk, maybe all you can do is a power snatch and a power clean and jerk. Maybe you can't even do the full movement, but you can do the movement well enough to where you kind of fit inside the rules. You know, you can lock it out appropriately and you can pull from the floor without potentially injuring your back or something like that. Once you've reached that point, start practicing competing. Go to competitions. Keep the expectations as this is practice for competing. And a mistake that people make, they may take that advice and they go, oh, I got to prep for this competition. My program has to like revolve around this competition.
No.
That is definitely don't do that. You should peak like going back to program design and why you need to look at it for an entire year. You should be peaking no more than 3 times a year. You know, you should be hitting, really going for big lifts and hitting PRs. The more advanced you become, your PRs are going to become less and less frequent, probably once every, you know, or 3 times a year. So, like, if you're competing and you need to practice competing and you need to get your first 5 weightlifting meets under your belt and you're only, like tapering 3 times a year, you're going to have to do some competitions where you're not at your best.
It's just a way of getting experience.
The point is not to PR at your meet.
Mm-hmm. Macklin just jumped into the meets, and that's kind of what started him off, right?
Yeah.
That's when he started taking off.
Highly motivating.
There's programming, there's technique, and everything we talked about. But like I said, what is a complete program? It sounds like it includes this component of being uncomfortable and exploring and taking chances and getting out and getting these experiences.
Absolutely.
Once you start competing, though, your training at that point actually matters.
That's true.
You come back
from your first meet and you're like, man, I got to fucking step up my game.
Yeah.
Like it actually matters for real now. It's not just like something you're doing for fun. It's like, okay, now I'm taking this serious.
Yeah.
And that's a massive shift in mindset. Isn't it? Mm-hmm. Huge.
Absolutely. And you know what? All the stuff we just talked about, this is exactly why we created the program Flight, the Flight weightlifting program. We saw that there wasn't like a comprehensive thing, or maybe there is somewhere, but we've been doing this for a while, and we kind of figured out this is exactly how we would want. This is how I would have wanted to be introduced to weightlifting. I mean, how I was introduced to weightlifting was fantastic, but now when we take people through, it's like ideally, it's like okay, in the next year we're gonna taper down 3 different times. The first 5 months we're gonna build up for that first time we're gonna actually max out, and it is gonna be comprehensive. We're gonna talk about nutrition, mobility, technique. We're gonna separate these things out in the program. We're gonna assume that you don't know anything. We're gonna assume that your weightlifting training you haven't been like focused on just weightlifting for years and years and years. We make the assumption that you're a beginner. And so we saw that there was a lack of that. And so that's where we're like, all right, we're going to create something that is for beginners. That's going to take you back to the basics, because I've trained since 2006 and I've gone back to the basics number of times. I'll run into a coach who's like, oh, and I find out that I have this flaw which means that I have to like start practicing like a beginner again. So even if you have been doing it for a while and you recognize I have some big gaps in my game, that's also a really big opportunity to go, okay, I'm going to hit the reset button.
There's nothing wrong with going back and being a beginner again.
So I've gone back. When I met Thacker, I kind of had a reset button moment. And I'd been lifting. So we met him in like 2012. So I've been lifting for 6 years and I hit the reset button.
It's a natural component of it's a good sign that you're still learning and growing.
Absolutely.
If you have those moments. If you don't have those moments, well, guess what, man? Go find those moments.
Yeah, so we've spent, you know, our lifetimes figuring this out, and that's kind of why we developed that the way we have.
Yeah, there's no such thing as actual mastery. There's only like approaching mastery. Yeah. Like I like the expression mastery is an asymptote. Like if you're a math dork, an asymptote is something that you get really, really close to, but you never actually ever get there. So if there's a line here, you get closer and 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 closer. You never actually get there though. That's mastery. Mastery is an asymptote. It means something that you can always get closer to, but you can never actually ever achieve it. You just get like half closer, half closer, half closer, half closer, half closer, but you'll never actually touch it.
And now that Doug has bummed you out, we're gonna close it down.
Math talk.
Oh shit. Make sure you go to barbellshrug.com, sign up for the newsletter. If you want a free weightlifting guide, and we'll kind of spell out exactly.
That's a legit book, son.
It's not guide is not a good word for it.
Yeah, that's a terrible word.
It's home.
It's like 55 pages where we map out and you can kind of sit down and really soak in as a beginner weightlifter what you need to be considering. So
you can link to a bunch of videos too.
Yeah, tons of videos. Mm-hmm. Like our whole series on how to do snatch, clean, jerk with you and Alex.
Yeah, 6-part series on clean jerk, 6-part series on snatches. We had a 3-part series on squats, which I'm not sure if that's in there or not. It might be in there, might not.
Maybe.
And then we had I don't remember. And then we had workouts in there as well. You had some of the week's workouts from flight. Is that right?
Yeah, we did weeks 3 and 33. That way you can kind of see the difference of different phases of training. And then also, you know, someone who's 3 weeks into a beginner program and 33 weeks in, kind of see like what that progression might look like.
For people listening now, the coolest part might be there's like tons of frequently asked questions. Like the most common things that we always got sent in, you know, message like about weightlifting.
The FAQ alone is going to be worth going over.
So even do us a favor and read that section. That'd be great. That way we can all move on. That's right.
All right, guys. Thanks for joining us.
Did you tell them where they could get that thing?
Flightweightlifting.com.
That's right.
Yeah.
Later.